baby.
Yeah, right. But no, you're absolutely right.
Here, this kind of feels maybe lazy a little bit.
Welcome to Set Cheddar Pop. Movie screenings.
Why not, you know?
Yeah, at that point, why not?
It's got to be Saturday somewhere. It does sound familiar.
It's hilarious. Hello! I think he did like 5 shows on this movie.
My name is Tom Cole.
Oh, you bite your tongue if this is not hold up.
Cream corn tonight.
Cream corn tonight. Tonight.
You are too kind.
Too honest.
Well, that should be good porn time. It's a movie.
And the giver of his laws. Disobedience to me is disobedience to him. Do it now.
Seize him. Happy Saturday, Robert.
Happy Saturday to you.
Wanted to kick off the show with a Children of the Corn clip. So I'm wearing Robert's t-shirt that he gave me, which I love. And Robert sent me a photo of his cat, Maeve, yesterday, kind of about corn. So the marketing that you have projected on me has worked.
It is, yeah. Diet Coke and Children of the Corn.
That's all I want to do.
That's all I have to do to take over.
When I'm an old guy with 2 marbles rolling around left in my head, I'm just going to be muttering like, seize him, Children of the Corn. And I'll be like, oh, Matt's having another spell.
Outlander.
So happy Saturday, sir. You're listening to Set Jetter Saturday. This is Robert Patterson, the creator of the website setjetter.com. How does this fine Saturday fare with you, sir?
Not too bad. I haven't. It's cooled down a little bit. I mean, it's like a balmy 83 degrees. So it's as cool as it's going to get for a while.
Significantly improvable, though, from last week.
Enough that I could take maybe for a walk in the corn.
Right. Is that a thing in Nebraska? Do people go for walks in the corn?
No, it's actually very hard to actually walk through corn. But
yeah,
my neighborhood's surrounded by corn. So.
And the corn is pleased.
Yeah, she was looking. So now maybe there was a cat that walks behind the rows. I don't know.
You're probably used to the corn. It's second nature.
Yes.
It's good corn time now, too.
Oh, is it?
I think so.
Not quite yet. It's not quite harvest time yet.
Do you ever get scared of the corn at night if you're like walking, you can't really see what's going on?
No. Just no. More or less at night, I guess, if deer are going to pop out. Yeah, that'll be it. Not like a certain movie we might be talking about later on the podcast. But yeah.
Right. Yes. Okay. So great show tonight. We're going to get into what you've been watching first. And Robert, let's kick it off with you. What's been watching?
Well, David Warner passed away, and so obviously he has done a slew of films, but the first thing that I think about is the classic, The Man with Two Brains.
Classic.
I don't know if you've seen it. It doesn't seem like you've probably been on your list. Steve Martin. Oh, you have it.
I own it.
You
I'm a
know
fan.
It.
I'm a big fan of The Man with Two Brains. Maybe one of the most underrated comedies of the 80s.
I still giggle, and I know it's always good for a rewatch every few years. And I remember watching it in college. I remember I was... A friend said, "What is this movie?" And we watched it one night, and I don't know. It's like, is his wife doing? I don't know. Yeah,
it is a great
walls
movie.
Are
it is
paper fun. Thin.
Yeah. And David Warner has such a colorful and distinguished acting career.
We
mentioned The Man with Two Brains, but everything. I mean, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles 2, Titanic. No matter what it was, like he was in there, man. He was great.
A couple Star Trek movies.
Mm-hmm.
Just did it all. Time Bandits? That was him, wasn't it?
Time Bandits, yeah.
Yeah. So, but yeah, so sad. So, yeah. So the movie I commemorated his death was The Man with Two Brains.
Man with Two Brains.
Uncredited Sissy Spacek role.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
The voice, yep.
Yeah, this is a great play.
As Anne Mel Mahay.
Mel Mahay.
Dr. Hoffer.
And it's a Carl Reiner film, which is
yeah.
nice one.
So, yeah.
Yeah.
If you haven't seen it, give it a watch.
Yeah, The Man with Two Brains. And this came out in, what year was this? 1983.
Oof, that is old. So.
I thought it was a little bit later than that, but there it is.
I probably caught up with it later, so... So speaking of throwbacks, I watched Moonraker, which I don't know if I've seen it all the way through, or I think as a kid, you're like, you wait so long for space stuff and you give up because that really doesn't happen till the end.
Right. But, yeah. With those yellow jumpsuits.
Yeah. So, and when gravity's necessary for budgetary reasons,
Right. Right. But, we're just gonna disregard this law of gravity.
Yeah.
That's with Roger Moore, right?
Yeah, Roger Moore, Lois Childs. It's a little bit of a cotton candy movie because even though I just watched it this week, there's pieces of it like, what happened? Like, it's already gone.
Yeah, right.
Out of my
brain. I own the movie. I haven't seen it in a long time, though, but it has Richard Creel's Jaws in there, right?
Oh, yeah. So Jaws and Jaws kind of at the end makes a turn and
change of heart.
And so it is kind of it's amusing. And I can see why, though, it's not up there on people's top Bond lists.
No, space movies, unless they're science fiction, kind of like a Star Wars, don't really age well in effects from like the 70s.
I like when all the astronauts, you see them come from both sides and each have their lasers.
Oh, right, the lasers.
Yes. But anyway.
I forgot all about the lasers. Yeah. I think Austin Powers took a lot of cues from that too, and their spoofs of like the space base or whatever.
Yes.
The moon base.
I think you are right. Yeah. And you see it, and it's like there's a lot of unnecessary empty space in this space station.
Yeah, it's massive.
Yeah.
It's like cement.
Nobody knew it was there. It wasn't on anybody's radar. So
right.
They had the technology back then.
Moonraker.
Kind of a 180, Agnes of God. So it was one of my favorite movies, Jane Fonda, Meg Tilly, Anne Bancroft, based on a play. And for some reason, I think it was Tubi, of course. Or Tubi or HBO Max, I can't remember.
Tonight's show is sponsored by Tubi.
I have not watched it in a while, and I was kind of disappointed in myself that I didn't realize last time. Obviously, I need to go back to Toronto to go to some of those filming locations.
Oh, is it was shot all in Toronto?
Mostly that in Montreal. It's supposed to take place in Montreal, but they just shot a lot in Toronto.
Okay.
And this is probably not a movie that's on your radar, but
Jane Fonda and Anne Bancroft, Meg Tilly. It's got all the right pieces right there. I don't think I've ever seen it.
So I may have said this before. Meg Tilly has a YouTube channel.
Oh, right. Yeah, you mentioned that.
Yeah. So she's as quirky in real life as you would imagine as some of her characters. But she's fun to listen to. She's open. She does Q&As, and people are asking questions about some of her movies and, you know, of course, Psycho 2 and The Big Chill. And she brought out, you know, she's wearing her leotard in the opening scenes of The Big Chill. She's doing yoga. She still has that, you know, and she.
Oh, really?
Yeah. So she kind of snuck. Well, I guessed where she said she was getting a role that she was going to Toronto for. So I guessed if she was going to be on the new Chucky series and season 2. And she is. Then
oh,
she.
Cool.
Said, yeah. So there's pictures of her with her sister on the set. So
go to bed.
Get in bed.
Get in bed.
I said, get in bed.
Oh, that's cool. Does her YouTube channel, does she like update it frequently?
Almost weekly. Yeah. So
really? That's cool.
It's tea time with Tilly, or Tilly's tea time. And so she always tells you what tea she's drinking. She takes the sip, and her husband's shooting it. And so it's fun.
Earl Grey.
I would recommend that. Watching a few and then watching one where her sister joins her. Two Tillys at once is almost overload. But
yeah, I can see that.
Nothing like it. So
No, I'm totally understanding what you're saying.
And there's a third Tilly sister that we have yet to see. So
oh, really? She's not an actress or anything?
Not an actress. So I'm just curious. I want them all three in a room.
Yeah. Throw them in a room. Roll the cameras. See what happens.
But then I also started Light and Magic. So it's just now streaming on Disney. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with that, but it's a multi-part series about the beginnings of and up to, I think, present for Industrial Light and Magic.
Yes. I just spoke to somebody that has been watching that. And they said it was really good. I haven't seen it yet, but I'll probably give it a watch. I always like that kind of stuff, to kind of see the evolution.
Yeah.
Such a big company like that. I mean, like a creative company like that. When you look at the Star Wars movies in the 70s, I mean, the stuff that they did is pretty impressive for the time of how they were able to pull off some of that. And talk about ingenuity and really, really doing like tedious work. It's not like there was, you know, the types of computers you have today that you can just drop a filter in. I mean, it was like frame by frame craziness.
Yeah, and as much as I bash Lucas for his prequels, scripts, and so forth.
Yeah.
But he actually, between him and Cameron pushing the technology edge on what we can do, if we didn't have those two, I don't know where our films would be.
No. I mean, a lot of their projects, they waited because they're like, the technology's not there yet. You know, like Avatar is a perfect example. He wanted to make that in the 90s. He's like, well, we have to wait. It's just not there. I mean, talk about restraint and innovation. Talk about light and magic.
I do wish they would have, like, oh, I wish I had a more creative title. They just literally took out industrial. So I was like,
right, I know, right?
It's came out a little something different, but we'll see.
The headquarters of Industrial Light and Magic's in San Francisco, right?
Yeah, or it's that. Yeah, that I think they're north of it. Yeah, but yeah.
Yeah. Have well, you ever
yes.
been there?
Oh no. Yeah. So yeah. Oh, you're talking about where like the Yoda is and so forth. Yes, that is correct. Yeah, it's right by the is it, I think it's by the Presidio, or right in the middle of it. I think so.
Yeah. You've been up there?
No, I've driven around it, but I've never made a stop to go see it. So I think I see pictures with other people. So I think part of it is accessible, if I remember right.
Yeah, I think so. And I think the outside has like the Yoda thing, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So you can at least see that.
But that's cool. Yeah. So is it a series or is it like a documentary?
I think it's like a six hours mini series.
Oh, okay.
Docu-series or something like that. It's all really, it seems to be all released at once. So.
Oh, that's cool.
You can binge it at your will.
I want to start a production company called Industrial Laziness and Magic, where it's like, I'm just going to throw After Effects on and just, you're going to get what I give you.
And see
what
happens.
Computer. Yeah. More crap. But Light Magic's on Disney Plus.
Yeah. Check it out. I don't know how it ends. It could end horribly. Who knows?
What's going to happen? We'll have to find out.
I'll pull out. I actually have, I think it was like from 83 or 84, a huge Industrial Light and Magic book. Everything from when they began up to 83, I think, or 84 and stuff like that.
Oh, really?
So, yeah. Maybe.
Oh, that's cool.
Maybe if you'll let me pause later, I'll see if it's handy. But yeah, it's a cool book. Yeah. It was expensive.
Yeah, check it out.
It's very expensive at the time. I remember my grandma bought it for me, but still have it.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Is it like a large coffee table kind of book?
Yeah, it's one of these.
Oh yeah, it's heavy.
Yeah, so
it was probably like $40 in 1980.
I'm sure it was. So who knows how much that cost now? Yeah,
you know, some of those coffee table books are awesome, and they're like no joke with the price. I was in Hawaii, and we were at this like kind of off the beaten path bookstore that was like supposed to be really famous. So we went in, and they had like all kinds of cool books. It was such a cool store, but they had a Nintendo Zelda like The Legend of Link book that was like in the shape of a controller. It was this big. Thing was like $300. I'm like, it's awesome, but I'm not. It's not the Magna Carta, like original copy or something.
I guess it would be expensive to print, but yeah.
I think so, and I think Hawaii they have to jack up the price. Yeah. It was probably more like 150, but it was awesome. There's like such cool books like that you're like, wow. If you're a collector or a big fan, I can see spending the money.
Yeah, sometimes you have to.
If there was a a big coffee table book on the stand, 1994, I would own it.
Maybe in 2024 there will be.
There will be.
It, you know, it'll be like standard television images blown up, so they're all fuzzy.
Exactly. Yeah, there's no high def or anything like that, high resolution. It's just screenshots.
And there's still be people like, where's Fran's house?
Hey, my name is Robert Patterson. Here is a list of most locations of the stand, which few people have really took the time to do. Why don't you ever film Franny's house?
How come you didn't go out to Maine?
Why do I hate myself? I know. Maine. I was thinking about you last night. I watched, I haven't watched anything too much this week. Been watching the new episode of Better Call Saul, but I watched Super 8. Ooh. And I was looking at where it was filmed on IMDb, and it was filmed in, I think, like West Virginia. States like that, like West Virginia, do you ever make pilgrimages to go there and like knock out a bunch?
The South is hard. There's nothing. South scares
me. It's tough.
Me.
That's why I asked. It's tough to do.
Yeah. And there's never quite enough there. Like what I want to do, and this isn't quite South, but like literally on my big bucket list is locations for Coal Miner's Daughter, and I just need I don't know. I just need to do it. That movie.
Where was it filmed?
I think that's more Kentucky and so forth, if I remember. Yeah. But, so, yeah, so I just need to do it. I guess Louisiana. There's actually in Florida, there's a few locations that I want to go to, but it's Florida. So it's like, not gonna. I just need to do it. I know people just literally take big road trips, and I literally could just take a 3-week road trip everywhere around I need to go. I just need to do it. So just make me.
I get it, though. It's easier to just fly to LA.
Yeah.
And knock out like 30 as opposed to like a 3-week trip where you can knock out like 5.
Yeah.
Or something.
But we'll see. One day.
Yeah. What are you going to do? So, yeah, Better Call Saul, Super 8, which I've only seen once in the theater, which I enjoyed. I thought it was,
I remember.
Nostalgic.
Yeah, I remember seeing it and I was like, oh, I knew it wanted to be. And I just, it was kind of a pre Stranger Things.
Yes. Yeah, I thought the same thing. I was like, this Stranger Things has taken a lot of cues from this with like the military and the kids, you know, the pop culture references. Yeah. It feels like a Stranger Things movie.
Because it does it take place in the 80s too, I think? Early 80s or 79? Okay.
Yeah.
So I couldn't remember. But yeah, so same thing. I think he recognized, was that J.J. Abrams?
Mm-hmm.
I think they both recognized that it could only work in that era, you know?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah, it has its flaws, but it's fun. I didn't really remember it. I remember not liking it that much when I saw it, but rewatching it, maybe it's the Stranger Things kind of influence, but I was like, this is cute. Ironically, that's the only movie that J.J. Abrams has directed that wasn't already part of an established franchise, like a Star Wars, which I felt kind of weird. But I guess he produces more, but it's the only movie he directed that wasn't already, you know, build an audience.
Good thing. I don't know. We'll have a J.J. Abrams.
Yeah, we'll do a J.J. Abrams show.
Because I do love Alias. So.
Do you like Lost too?
But like a lot of people, I like season one.
Well, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, season one and two are some of the best writing ever.
Yeah.
After that, it gets a little diluted. Gets a little ambitious.
It's
beautifully shot. I think that really helps. You're like, well, every scene is beautiful. You're in Hawaii.
It is Adam Sandler version of filmmaking. Yeah, only place we can shoot this, you know. Yeah, it'd be different because, you know, if you're trying to shoot it and you know, the Karate Kid beach, you're like, we all know where we're at.
Right. I get it. They shot Planet of the Apes here.
Yes.
Let's keep going. The and the other one I watched was European Vacation. I haven't seen that in a minute, so it's cute.
How, yeah,
it's the weakest link. It's not a movie I watch a lot for that reason. I visit it every maybe like 5 years or so, but I watched the first one the week before, so I was like, I'll watch this again.
There's a few. I don't.
There's some laughs.
Billy Zabka, Karate Kid, just right. One of the guys.
One of the guys.
But I did tell him like last time I saw him, I said, I was talking about that movie for so, and I said, I still laugh at when Audrey's there at the dinner. She's, God, I miss Jack.
God, I missed
you. But
yeah, she's overly sexual.
And I guess they, but yeah. So, and well, I guess it was a pretty sexual movie. Now they're like, I mean, they're in
it
Europe,
is.
So
it is. Yeah.
What's the name of their videotape gets stolen, and she's called some. Is it the American Housewife or something?
Something like that. Something yeah. Like that.
So, but I love Beverly D'Angelo.
Oh, me too. She's a national treasure. She's great. Sparky, I'm glad to be back. Sparky, what was on that video camera? Get in the fountain. No, get in the fountain. But yeah, it is. I think even Chevy Chase said he hated the movie and it was like the weakest link.
They try. I mean, on paper, should be good. So,
well, Eric Idle is in it. And I read that that Chevy Chase and Eric Idle were writing a vacation in Australia for the one after that. But they couldn't come up with anything except for like some shark bits or something like that. And it ended up falling flat. But I think Chevy Chase is known for doing a lot of wanting to do a lot of projects and kind of flakes off.
Gets tired of them. And
yeah. When I saw him speak like 2 Christmases ago, he did like a Q&A after the screening of Christmas Vacation. And he said that he like writes stuff every day, but he knows he'll never really like get around to doing anything with it. And it's just more of like a creative process to write stuff down, which is, I get. But I think that's kind of like was this thing. He wanted to do all these projects and was like, yeah, I'll just do another movie that can just pay me. Like Nothing But Trouble.
Oof.
Maybe the worst movie ever.
Worst movie ever
with the best cast, I would say. They have so many good parts.
Yeah, and when I think about Chevy Chase, obviously he's one of those, you know, the kind of one out of three that, you know, that kind of knock it out of the park for one reason. I can't blame all on him one way or the other for the success or not. But, you know, obviously Foul Play and a couple of the vacation movies. And then you have like Modern Problems that just doesn't age well. But
Memoirs of an Invisible Man.
Yes. Oof. I think do we blame Carpenter for that? I don't know. You know, that was probably just a bad mix of John Carpenter and Chevy Chase and the script.
Yeah.
None of it gelled.
No.
And Daryl.
No, it didn't.
Just trashing everybody here.
Yeah. No, it's true. So yeah, that's what I've been watching. Nothing to write home about. Yeah, European Vacation.
I saw it in the theater.
Did you really?
Yeah, I remember because it opens with Pig in a Poke, and I'm like, what is the, you know, I was like, this is the wrong movie, but.
Yeah. Hey, speaking of Pig in a Poke, they do the overly sexual long kiss with the host and the daughter.
Oh, yeah.
And then remember in Vacation, they're like, but Daddy says, I'm the best.
The best, yeah.
There's a lot of inappropriate child kind of stuff going on in those early movies. I guess it was funny at the time, but they do not hold up well.
It just, that's the way it was in the 80s.
No, I know. You see that in a lot. And they don't revisit those bits. They just say it and that's it.
I think we talked about this before, but you see, say vintage movies, you know, on the big screen, like at Alamo or whatever. Like I remember Footloose, you know, she gets slapped around a couple times, and I don't remember that being a big deal. You know, I remember people kind of hushed. You know, I remember when her father slapped her, but it was nothing like call the police. You know, like well, maybe she shouldn't have been going out so late, and this wouldn't happen. You know, and then her boyfriend just kicks the shit out of her. But I remember it's like, yeah, everybody hated him, but nobody was up. Nobody's like, why isn't he arrested?
You'd think. I mean, I have a now. You're gonna get locked up.
Now it would
but
be.
But then it's like,
anyway.
What are you thinking? I'm the best.
Daddy says that.
Daddy says that.
Yeah. So yeah, between Original Vacation and then Christmas, you know, those are the pretty good.
Yeah. Right. Not as good as Jaws 3D, but up
well,
there.
Well, what can be? Come on.
Jaws 3D is a fun movie. You love it, don't you?
I do.
I love that.
It'll always be one of my favorites.
I love that you love it. It's great. Okay, so this is a new segment Robert put together. This is really cool, Robert. What is this whole situation?
For some reason, I was thinking today, and I told you a little bit before we got on, I was like, well, pardon me, I love kind of movie gaps, you know, like what? And I was telling him that the Raiders of the Lost Ark if Indiana Jones was real and was doing his things in Raiders of the Lost Ark, he'd be in the 1981 world in 4 years, I think, which is just kind of crazy to think. But anyway, it got me thinking. Yeah, in our last podcast about Summer of 82, and it got me thinking of like what was the top hit this particular weekend? You know. 5 years ago and 10 years ago and 15. So I just did a little quick search to see what everybody was flocking to at the time. So,
yeah. And this is such a cool idea. I love this. So basically it's number one every 5 years. So
this particular
5 years, this particular weekend.
Yeah. The best that I can.
Right. Every five years would be quite a list. So this particular weekend, it was Dunkirk in 2017, which I actually never saw theatrically. I only saw it on home release.
It is. I thought that was kind of strange that it made it to number one, but good for them.
Yeah.
You know, like with nothing else going on. I guess you're kind of nearing the tail end of the summer. I don't know.
Right. But I'm surprised that it was number one, too.
Yeah.
I thought I would figure it would be like a sleeper or at least just do well. But Dunkirk's, it's okay. I praise the special effects, of course, but it's one of those movies I'll probably never really watch again.
No, that's some of these number one. Well, not this particular list, but you look back and like some you'll never hear of again. Like, obviously, you know, it was number one for 3 weeks in a row. And then you say it now and people are like, what? I don't.
Yeah. What?
I didn't
what
see
is,
that. But
so setjetter.com is number one at least 2 weeks a month.
Yeah. He's already been there. So,
yeah.
So going back 10 years, The Dark Knight Rises. So not surprising. That
right. No. How well did that do compared to The Dark Knight? Was it probably more money, right?
I don't know. It's sometimes it's always the reverse where Dark Knight is the better movie. Mm-hmm. But sometimes just based on, hey, we want to see the next one, Dark Knight Rises.
Right. Because of everything that happened.
I can't imagine it did better. But I remember, I don't know. I wasn't quite going for the shtick. By the time we got to the third one.
Right. Yeah, it's kind of like Pirates of the Caribbean. The first one was the least successful one. I mean, it still grossed almost $700 million. But the other ones, like, outdid it by twice as much. But you're like, yeah, they're not as good at all.
Yeah.
Dark Knight Rises also had that Colorado situation, the shooter. Mm-hmm. So I think that I don't know.
Yeah. And it's strangely, it didn't really... I don't think it hurt the movie too much. I mean, I think there was a big disassociation that people don't, when they think of Dark Knight Rises, they don't automatically think of the Aurora, Colorado. Like some other things you think about, like, oh, that was remember that disaster is tied to such and such, but.
Right. Yeah. No, I agree 100%. Dark Knight Rises too, I thought was ambitious enough. You know, Dark Knight was ambitious. Dark Knight Rises, they tried to switch it up a little bit. I enjoy the movie. It's okay, but I felt like they spent too much time. Batman doesn't really come in as Batman until the third act, and you're kind of waiting the whole movie as like Christian Bale with his creamy hamstrings, is like getting his back ready. And
he has this cane and oh, that's right. I remember the big thing is like nobody understood a single thing he said. Bane, it's like
don't understand him. What are we going to do now?
He's talking to that whole the whole stadium, and they're looking at each other like, what? Like, we've all been at stadium. Like, you could never quite understand completely anything. So they probably all they heard is like the field blew up and then somebody's been mumbling into a microphone for 20 minutes. So
people of Gotham.
Like, what? They should just do a whole Naked Gun where the whole audience is like, what?
What? 5 years before Dark Knight Rises is Simpsons movie, which I did see theatrically, Robert.
I did.
I don't remember what it's about, though.
And I think even at the time, this movie was 10 years too late. But yeah. it did well, obviously.
It did.
Enough to... The Simpsons is a such of the time, so anytime you revisit an older episode, they never quite hit, you know... It's kind of like when you watch old Saturday Night Live and they mention
Ross Perot's running for president.
Correct. Yeah. And there's like people, you know, and everybody's like, oh, I remember, you know, the joke is gone and you kind of don't quite get those references. I'll be honest. I haven't seen that movie, the Simpsons movie, since I came in the theater. I don't think there's been a reason to rewatch it. But
no, me too. Yeah. Theater. That was it. I guess it was OK at the time, but it was definitely came out after its prime by like 10 years. And Simpsons, I think a lot of the episodes, the early ones, they have, you know, there's some good humor in any season, but totally right with the topical references. You know, I rewatched it not too long ago, I think like seasons 3 and 4, and there was a lot of like O.J. Simpson jokes and like Clinton, and it's very, very a product of the 90s.
At the time.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not a big rewatch factor for some, I'll say.
I'm going to skip over you and read the next one, if I may. It has a special place in my heart.
This is your movie.
2002. I was a young man crying in a field waiting for this. 2002 is Signs. This was such a big moment to see this movie for me. We used to go to the set when they were filming and try to like sneak on. And I would drive by it because it was 5 minutes from my parents' house. I would just drive by at night and like they had like the night shoot set up with like the lights in the fields. And I was just so excited for this movie. So when it came out, the power went out in the theater, the opening night. And they got it back on, but the AC was out. And they were like, we're going to refund the movie. I was like, no, we already had halfway in. We're just going to play it.
Yeah.
I toughed that shit out in the hot August heat.
Or whatever. To make it worth it? I mean,
July it was.
Yeah. Or were you too distracted by the heat?
No, it was worth it. It was worth every second. Cherry Jones as the Bucks County Sheriff, which doesn't exist, like, or the police department. But anyway, that's neither here nor there. Signs was naturally a good fit to be number one. It was off the heels of Unbreakable and Sixth Sense. Mel Gibson was, you know, still huge at that point. Joaquin Phoenix. So it was good.
It was, it reminded me, because one, it's kind of the same time frame, and two, the hype coming up to Jordan Peele's Nope, which is his third film, and this was M. Night's third major film, I guess. Not, I mean, he did some films before that, but the excitement of, like, to see this director's next film kind of felt the same, where people were, curiosity was still high to see what he was going to come up with next. And so I kind of felt the same aura around these two movies, kind of excitement for the summer that people were looking forward to see what he was going to come up with. And you kind of didn't know what was going to happen. I mean, same thing, is this Aliens? You know, what is, the trailers tried not to give as much away. Nope, gave
right,
a little bit more
away. What is the twist going to be? You don't know if it's aliens or some kind of, like, monster or government thing. But that's a great parallel.
Yeah, I just kind of felt the same. And maybe because one's in the corn, one's in the desert, you know, but they have some, obviously, a lot of parallels there.
Yeah, and with the directorial kind of sequence of the third, like, big movie and how's it going to do, I'm going to need some Gorilla Glue, a contractor, some spackle, and a Home Depot gift card to clean up the mess behind me, because you just blew my brains all over the wall. That's pretty good, though. That makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Summer, you know, hype was built up for some, you know, like, and remember, I'm trying to remember some of the pre-promo, because remember, it's like they get bits and pieces, you know, and am I remembering it correctly, did they actually put some corn, did they put some marks in the corn, you know, in the weeks leading up to it and stuff like that?
Yeah, they did that, I believe. And they also did a whole teaser, like, early on, that was just cornfields, you know, sign. What are they called? Crop circles?
Yeah,
crop circles. Yep. And they were like New Zealand 1971. And then they just showed like India 1983. Mm-hmm. And then they went to like signs coming next year. They didn't have any like cast in there. It was just like an M. Night Shyamalan film. You're like, what is this?
Yeah.
You didn't really know what it was at first.
So, yeah. So anyway, it just feels the same to me. The kind of excitement leading up to it. And then.
Yeah.
But yeah. Did you go see Nope? Yeah, I can't remember. Yeah, we did.
No,
yeah, we talked about
yet.
It. Oh, you haven't? I can't remember.
No.
Okay.
I have to, though. There's two movies I want to see. Nope is one of them. The other one's Elvis.
I will wait for HBO Max for that one, but thank you.
You don't want to see Tom Hanks in a fat suit going, I'll make a star out of you.
No, I don't. Nothing about it has been appealing to me, but...
I know why. I can tell you why.
Well, you tell me why.
Or a reason why.
Okay.
I'm guessing. The guy doesn't look anything like Elvis.
He doesn't. He seems to be wearing too much makeup or is a little...
He doesn't look anything like him.
Yeah.
And he looks like a bad impersonator. There's impersonators that are phenomenal. I mean, they're not actors, but like he...
And not that that's the only reason. And, you know, people can get past that, obviously. But...
Right.
But yeah, so I don't know. And speaking of biopics, I saw Madonna is now planning to direct her own biopic, which I don't know if that's a good idea.
Wait, she's going to direct somebody else playing her?
Correct. So she's been co-writing the script, and at one point she was co-writing with Diablo Cody, and then she was supposedly fired and then somebody else or whatever. So I'm like, oh, she might be a little too involved, not only script wise, but then if you're going to direct, I don't know. And her thing is like, she's just afraid. I can't remember exact words, but she doesn't want a man, directing her life biopic when she knows herself better than anybody. But then part of me is like, you know what? There's a lot of good female directors out there.
Yeah.
So careful what you're saying.
Right. Not to mention, I mean, I'm always, first of all, biopic of Madonna would be great. She has such an amazing story. I mean, there's every making of a great Hollywood film in her life. Like, it's perfect. But I'm always like skeptical when, first of all, somebody's like making about themselves. Like, what's the source material? Like, your mind? Like, but okay, I can get past that. But I'm always a little skeptical of biopics of people that are still alive. It's like, granted that her biggest success and everything is clearly behind her, and that's a legacy to live that'll live forever. But it's like, what else? Maybe she'll still do something. Like, I don't know. You don't know how it ends.
Yeah, I don't know. And then I was thinking, Mary Lambert directed quite a few of her greatest videos, Like a Prayer. And then she went on to direct, you know, bring her on, you know, she's still working.
Obviously, is it like a real project that's going to happen, or was she just like tweeting about it?
It is. I mean, she's been working on the script, so I imagine it will, it's probably ludicrous enough that it could easily be bought, you know, that it'll happen, I think, but
we need to campaign and get ourselves small parts in this movie. Even if it's like coffee guy number one, giving her coffee on like backstage or something. We need to get in that movie, Robert, especially you.
You don't know Madonna fans. They will camp out for 3 weeks to be in the. They'll go much farther than I will. I'll say that.
No, we got to get you in there. You're Robert Patterson. You're the set jetter. You got clout.
No, but
okay. You're like,
if she happens to show up in Omaha, then I'm like, all right, I guess.
Yeah. I've never camped out overnight, but I have done the waiting extraordinarily early for a concert outside or backstage to see somebody that I really liked. And I get it. I get like putting in the time for like 10 hours. It's like, it's fine.
Oh yeah. I mean, and I have definitely put in that time to make sure I get front row in the pit, you know, or kind of whatever it happens to be.
Yeah.
Now that's 10 years ago, actually, right. This summer. But you know, I was also 10 years younger and, and like European fans, I mean, I just saw videos of them camping out for days on end for Lady Gaga, and I was like, nope, I am past that.
You're past.
Yeah,
I've done this. I don't need to do this anymore. Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah, I can't think of any band that I would camp out for.
No,
for anything. I can't think of anything I would camp out for. I don't even like camping.
No, who would? Even though I would have liked to see Joni Mitchell perform.
Oh, yeah.
That was amazing to see. But
yeah.
I don't know if that was a big surprise or I don't know.
That would have been cool.
Yeah. Anyway.
Cool.
So, Signs.
So, Signs. All right. So, what was 5 years before Signs? What was the number one film this weekend?
We're in 1997 and Get Off My Plane.
That was the tag. That was the line, right?
That was the big line, yeah. Air Force One.
Air Force One.
Yeah. With our first woman vice president.
Yes, the great Glenn Close.
Yes.
So this was Harrison Ford in the 90s, where he did Patriot Games, The Fugitive, Clear and Present Danger, and Air Force One. He was doing these like big blockbuster action movies every year, right? This was like a stretch.
Yeah. So the movie,
Air Force One, Gary Oldman.
Yeah.
Okay.
So yeah, maybe he's in every one of these movies that we're talking. and so it still mostly holds up. It's ridicule. I mean, it ends on such a bad special effects piece with Air Force One crashed into the ocean. But for the most part, it kind of works as a movie, and it was kind of, you know, intriguing to see what could happen. Obviously, this is all pre 9/11, so it was more fun than any potential.
Right. Yeah. You took that with a grain of salt.
So, and you know me in plane crashes, and I mean, I watch. That's what I do in my spare time is watch plane crash videos. But this is kind of right up my alley.
You're obsessed. You. It's interesting stuff to watch. That
it is.
Did Air Force One, is that the one where I've seen the movie a bunch of times, but the ending, they kind of get the people off the plane into another plane?
Some of them parachute out the back, if you remember.
Okay.
And then they have a hook, you know, where they have to go, you know, there's only so many parachutes and so forth, and they have to zip them across and so forth. So, and then they leave more or less the bad guy on the plane. Spoilers.
Right. Oh, right.
Everybody,
the Secret Service agent was like in on it. He was corrupt.
Yeah,
I do like that. Harrison Ford, they got the president into the escape pod right away, but then he stayed behind. because it shows like, all right, we took care of the president, but he's here on his own kind of.
Yeah, doing like his diehard thing. Yeah.
Right, right.
Yeah, I do. I remember behind the scenes, like on Entertainment Tonight, because they, you know, built a lot of the fuselage, and it was, I think it was, not all of it was on a gimbal, but I remember the reporter, it was kind of a younger reporter, and he's like, wow, this must be quite an amazing set. And I remember Harrison Ford's like, I've been on Star Wars. Like, this is not, really? A, you know, like, you know, yeah, this is fine, you know.
I was in Raiders of the Lost Ark. This is not.
Yeah, this airplane.
This airplane.
Set. Yeah, like, wow, yeah.
Yeah. That is kind of a dumb thing for a reporter to say. It's like he was on the Millennium Falcon.
Correct, yeah.
You know, this plane really doesn't mean shit in his big career.
Yeah, he's like, this is nothing. This is an extra house for me in Idaho, you know.
Right, exactly. Yeah, doesn't he live in, like, Wyoming and all those places?
I think so, yeah, somewhere. I don't know why I said it. I think, didn't Bruce Willis and them live in Idaho? I can't remember, but
yeah,
they buy up a bunch of land in those areas.
Right.
He landed in Omaha once. I remember that was a big deal, and stopped to eat while his plane was being refueled.
Who's that?
Harrison Ford.
Oh, that's cool. Did he go to the Alamo and go to a
Legally Blonde screening? This was years ago. I think we had a Hollywood diner by the airport, I think, or something like that, and that's where he ate. But yeah, I think Callista might have been with him. I can't remember, but
That's cool.
Not quite the best pilot, everybody, but.
No, he's crashed like 3 times.
Yes.
You know, he's also flying really like unsafe planes. The last time he crashed in Santa Monica, he was flying like a prototype from like the 50s. It looked like a radio flyer with wings. I was like, that thing does not look safe. It looks like a big remote control airplane.
And he doesn't seem like a risk taker, really, you know? I mean,
no.
But yeah. Harrison Ford, you do what you want.
You do what you want. So next is 1992. This is a favorite of, I think, ours.
Yes, definitely a favorite of mine.
Death Becomes Her.
Yes. One, I was glad to see this became a number one because it was probably just number one for a weekend. But it obviously did not do as well as they kind of hoped. At the time, Bruce Willis and Goldie Hawn and Meryl, you know, Streep at their top of their game. Robert Zemeckis was still kind of able to do no wrong. And he's the other, I guess, when I think of a third person that is continually pushing the technology envelope, this movie was one of those. And some of the things he did that had never been seen before.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Just looking at some of the scenes in there, the special effects for, what was it, 1992?
Mm-hmm.
Pretty impressive. And this was kind of the cusp or the dawn up there with, like, Terminator 2, where they were really doing some pretty amazing things in the early 90s, Jurassic Park, where it didn't look fake. And you're like, wow, this still holds up today. It was pretty amazing, actually.
Absolutely. So, I cite many lines from this movie.
What's your favorite?
Oh, when they're in the limousine and going to the book premiere and Bruce Willis is just kind of breathing. And she's like, could you just not breathe?
Can you just not breathe?
My other favorite is, like, and it's really out of context, it doesn't mean anything, but Goldie Hawn is going like, here's what we're going to do. You know, first we'll poison her glass or whatever, and she, you know, she'll drop dead. And then she goes, first we'll finish dinner. Then it's like this throwaway line, you know, like they're actually going to finish dinner while she's sitting there dead and then go on with getting rid of the body. But.
Right. Yeah, that is a classic. That really is a great movie. Okay, so 87, 5 years prior, number one film this weekend was The Living Daylights.
Yes.
Which is 007. This is Timothy Dalton's first of two entries into the James Bond franchise.
Did he only do two? Was it this and License to Kill? I feel like he did more, but maybe that's right. Yeah.
Maybe.
We'll leave it to the James Bond fans. But so I remember I was working in the movie theater at the time. So.
You're working in the theater when this came out?
Yep. 17 years
old. That's so cool. Did you watch this theatrically during working hours? Like, is that a thing when you're projecting back there?
No, I watched more Masters of the Universe.
Oh, yeah, of course.
I don't know, why, but it was more entertaining movie. So,
Living Daylights, this did, obviously number one, it probably, as most Bond movies did, it did significantly well. It looks like it was $191 million off a budget of $40 million, which is pretty good. 1987.
Yeah. I think, obviously people, as we talked about before, people weren't quite sure what to take of this Bond. This was a much more serious Bond. There was kind of no jokey middle ground, which maybe in retrospect, they should have done a bridge of part jokey, not quite, you know, the Roger Moore jokiness, yes, but somewhere in between. But people, when we said it's a little bit ahead of its time, people obviously in the 2000s wanted the serious Bond.
Right. And I think it was good timing. It was kind of like Batman Begins, where the 90s Bonds got really silly at the end. And same with like the Batman movies at 2000s. It was like, we need a more serious reboot kind of thing. And that's what you got. Mid-2000s.
Can we have like a Bond, There's No Way Home, where we can have all, get them all together somehow, you know? You get some CGI for the ones that have passed and just make it all work. I don't know.
Right, throw it in there.
Where they all show up at the office at the same time. Like, crap, they're all of them are here.
Who are you? Who are you?
I'm Bond. Yeah, I'm Bond. Yeah.
It looks like Timothy Dalton only did two Bonds, which I thought maybe there was three. But...
Yeah, I felt like there was three, but obviously they got booted him quickly.
Yeah. So The Living Daylights. What was 1982, sir?
As we discussed a few episodes ago, E.T. the Extraterrestrial. Summer of 82, it rained long, as it should have, for number one.
Yes, highest grossing film at that point, only to be broken by Jurassic Park on the same day. Mm.
11 years later.
Yeah.
By the same director.
And ironically, that was unseated by Titanic, which was unseated by the same director there. So, kind of a pattern. But E.T., I would imagine, was only like 11 months old when that came out. So I didn't really see it theatrically for my little eardrums. I imagine that was in the theater for like, what, like 3 months at number one or something?
It was, I think so. I think it rained most of the summer. And then a lot of these movies just stayed actually in the theater. They were still, there was no immediate home video release imminent. You know, it wasn't a, it used to be, remember, video release used to be maybe a year later. And now it's like,
you wait a while.
Now it's like, just wait 6 weeks and
you can watch it.
Yeah. It was just, I mean, people kept going back and back and back. And I think when you look at some of these, not necessarily this list, but the ones that remain number one for years and years, I think it is, I was thinking about this before, it's the adult audience, not the kids that are actually bringing in the big dollars. Kids movies, they'll go to once, I think, or whatever, but not, when I look at some of these, I'm like, it's the adults that are coming back, or it's the adults that are all went to Nope, you know, that they kind of wanted some more sophistication. I think that's why Halloween 2018 was so successful, that adults wanted to see what was going on.
Yeah, no, that's a good point. And with the kids movies too, that model's kind of built on that. They know, like, all right, you're going to take your kids, so that's double the tickets, and you're only going to see it once. So that's kind of the idea for the most part. So that makes sense.
And they'll make their money on Blu-rays and all that other stuff.
Right. On merch. Did you see E.T.? You saw E.T. theatrically, right?
Oh, of course. Yeah. So,
what an amazing movie to see.
It was. So, it was a little, you know, as a 12-year-old boy, like, obviously it's pretty emotional, but you're trying to keep those in check, obviously, and with the friends and stuff like that.
How do you not cry at that? Come on.
I know. It was just awful. And it's usually, it's probably the Drew Barrymore scene. Like, I mean, she's the one that pushes you over the edge, you know. Because she's just raw.
Oh, yeah. And it's a heartbreaker.
It is.
It's a tearjerker. That's when you're like, I have an itch in my eye. I'm still cool.
I don't know what happened.
I don't know what happened. What is this? E.T., we went to, the last time we were in town, we went to the Poltergeist house. Mm-hmm. And somebody commented on the photo we took, and they said, probably Spielberg's best non-directed picture.
Yeah.
Would you agree with that?
Here's the thing, and it's funny you mentioned that, because I see a lot of this when I was watching Light and Magic. So George Lucas didn't direct Empire Strikes Back or Return of the Jedi. Obviously, he was pulling a lot of strings and direction behind the scenes. And so yeah. I kind of feel that's the same thing that was happening on Poltergeist, where I do believe Tobe Hooper truly was, I should say, the lead director on it. But Steven had his thumb in a lot of things and the way kind of things turned out. So it's kind of a mix between the two. So I don't know, usually people like, you hear both sides. You hear actors saying, Toby was always directed me. I don't know what people are talking about. And then you've heard other people say, Spielberg was on the set every day calling the shots. So it's probably a little bit of combination, but.
Right. Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And I think it is like that, and maybe Goonies are like two of his better works that he produced only. Mm-hmm. That, you know.
But then you also, Spielberg has his finger in everything that you.
Everything.
Paranormal Activity. I mean, he got the ending change. You know, like he's not associated with that film at all. I mean, in the public view, but he decided, no, it needs to end this way. You know, like.
Right, yeah.
He calls all the shots.
He has his fingers in a lot of pots.
All roads lead to Steven.
Yeah, they all go back. And his best movie directed is a tough, you can't really answer that question, but most people would probably say Hook.
Oh, he paid for that dearly, didn't he?
Hook, on paper, with Robin Williams and all that in 1991 or whatever, had all the, you can see why they wanted to do that. Like a Peter Pan, it's built in, it's fantasy, it's kids.
How could you go wrong?
How could you? Yeah, I don't know. Maybe Dustin Hoffman as Hook. Like, you want him to be funny, but he's like in between. That was a weird element.
It's like weird to think
Peter Pan,
because you think there's a 2-year gap between Hook and Jurassic Park and Schindler's List. Like, you'd be like, how different?
Yeah, right.
Quality, you know, like how's that possible?
So different.
Yeah. But was Spielberg on the set? You know, was he actually direct? You know, I don't know.
Did he just send a proxy?
Was he busy writing, thinking of other things during the time? Who knows?
Right. Right. It's funny. Okay. And 1977, of course, was Star Wars.
Which I think was just number one for the rest of the year.
Yeah. Right. What a powerhouse.
So obviously we've talked about this before. I did see this in the theater. I think I had just moved to Omaha, or we traveled to Omaha to see this. And I remember going to Target after and getting the Star Wars comic book so you could relive the movie.
Oh, really? What, oh, after yeah. You saw the movie?
Yeah, yeah. So the thing, you know, I remember seeing the trailer for Star Wars on TV. And I remember I thought it was a little scary because they had a door going down, you know, like, and I was like, oh, I might be too scared to see it as a 7-year-old. But obviously, yeah. Once I was there, yeah.
That's so cool. And that's, it was just called Star Wars. There was no A New Hope or anything. No, it was just no. Star Wars. Yep.
I saw the original.
Yeah, that's so cool.
Unaffected. And so, yeah, but yeah. And of course, as you can imagine, just the amount of later the merchandise. I mean, you just, every kid for that couple of years just lived and breathed Star Wars cards and later action figures and all that stuff.
Yeah, I had a lot of those action figures as a kid. I had the, you might have had it too, like the Darth Vader case that held them in there. And you would like, it was a plastic like snap-on, yeah. like a lunchbox kind of material. And you would open it up and it had like compartments for all the like figures that you got.
My friend had that one. Mine, I still had the kind of briefcase type version. Actually, I still have it. And my Star Wars figures are still in there. So.
Oh, yeah. Oh, that's cool.
Still not sure what I'm still doing with them, but
holding on to them forever.
I don't know. I have a fair amount of Star Wars childhood stuff that they're just kind of there, but
oh, that's cool.
I should sort through and start selling it or
take an inventory.
Yeah. So I did quite a bit, obviously, when we moved to this new house. And then you see things like, oh, this, if it still brings back a special memory, we should hold on to it. So
yeah. Right, because, you know, you'll think about it one time and want to take it out, and, you know, it's nice to have.
Yeah.
Okay, so that was, what was number one this week? Every 5 years ago, which is a cool, cool new segment there.
Just something I was thinking about.
Next up, I have horror movie questions for Robert. Mm. Rapid fire edition, Robert. So I'm going to ask you a series of 10 questions. These are opinions. These are not trivia.
And I want to know your
gut reaction. Is that okay?
Yes.
For example,
I'm like, all right.
It would be like, you know, you're in Michael Myers' house. What weapon do you want to have between this and that? Something like that. I'm just curious, the mind of Robert Patterson, where your head goes during these.
All right. Are they this or that responses too?
Some are, some are not.
Okay. All right. I'm just preparing myself.
Yeah, they're going to be, some are, you know, have multiple choice. Some are just your preference. But they're all based on the horror film universe and movies that we've all talked about. A lot of them, most of them, all of them, actually, you've covered. So we're going to get into the mind of the maestro here.
All right.
Okay, so Robert, who would win in a street fight? Laurie Strode, circa Halloween Ends. Okay, so the movie coming out. She's
all right.
From that trailer.
Yeah, asking me to extrapolate, but go ahead.
Okay.
Go ahead.
Okay, let's just say Laurie Strode from the Halloween franchise. Yeah. Or Ellen Ripley, circa the end of Alien 1.
Gotcha. Whew. I'm going to go with Ripley.
Mm-hmm.
Which
she's resilient.
I love Laurie Strode, but she's dropped the knife a couple times.
Right. If you want to talk about weaponry.
Yeah.
Flamethrower.
Yeah. Flamethrower versus a dropped butcher knife. But I don't know.
A dropped butcher knife.
Well, she does it a couple times. Well, that's why I think, I mean, she knows. I mean, in the original Halloween, that one time she takes a bit of the knife, but she throws it away, and then after she stabs him like in the groin or whatever, then she also like kicks it away, you know?
Right.
And so I was like, well, yeah, Ripley, I can't imagine doing that.
No. She was good with the hands.
Yeah.
She wasn't dropping them. Okay. Next one. Would you rather, who would you rather encounter while you're out set jetting? All right. Mm. So you're out doing your thing. Michael Myers in broad daylight when you're in Piru, California. He's just there watching you.
Which he
or
could be.
Or you're at the...
If you've been to Piru, he very well could be.
It's very possible.
Yeah.
Or you're at the is that how you say it? Valuze Movie Ranch?
Yeah.
And you see Jason Voorhees' reflection in the barn behind you when you're in there. Would you rather have happen?
What would I rather? Like,
You have to pick one.
Or, yeah. For whatever reason, I probably want to see Jason, actually, because he's on the proper location.
I thought you might say that.
Yeah.
That's
just
good.
Just because otherwise it'd be Michael's like, you have no movies in Piru, Michael. What?
Right. It might just be a pervert dressed up in a mask.
It could be. Otherwise it'd be like, yeah, Sylvester Stallone in Piru with his, you know, matchstick in his mouth and sunglasses or.
Crime is a disease.
Yeah. But I think we'd all like to see Jason in the actual filming location.
I think that would be very cool.
Yeah.
That's a good answer, sir. Okay, next one is you're in the final act of a horror movie situation, okay, towards the end of the film, be it what you may. Which final girl from any franchise in the horror genre do you want to be with you to help?
Trish Jarvis from Friday the 13th, the final chapter.
Without skipping a beat.
Without,
I love it.
She is the one.
That's awesome.
She
that
will
was right
always,
off the tongue.
Yeah, so obviously I love my Laurie Strode, but I was like, knife for knife, Trish Jarvis is the one that I want to be battling with. So
yeah, she's not dropping any knives.
She did not. Yeah,
good answer.
She was resourceful.
Resourceful.
She runs in 80s boots in the rain.
Yeah. Okay, that's a great answer. Okay, next question on the horror movie questions for Robert. You're swimming in an unknown lake in Nebraska. Okay, you're just out there swimming. What do you want to feel brush past your feet under the water? The tail of the Lake Placid alligator. It's kind of a scary thing. Or the wrinkled, crinkly hand of Mrs. Voorhees. Doesn't mean you're going to necessarily perish in either situation, but it's under there, and you feel it brush against your tootsies.
Obviously, I would choose Mrs. Voorhees because... One, I could probably swim away. And two, it just means I would wake up later with completely dry hair and be like, what happened? You know.
You're a good man. You're a better man than I. I'd pick the alligator.
How do you get out of that?
I figured I'm in its home. It's a aquatic animal by nature. And it probably senses that I have a kinship with the animal folk. And it would probably come up and we'd hang out on the beach for a little bit in this Nebraska lake and maybe bask in the sun. And then he'd go back swimming and I'd go to the Alamo and watch Pretty in Pink with You or something like that.
No. So
we have a wrinkled hand.
I don't know. We have a lake across the street. And I will obviously not. I got in a kayak in that lake, but I won't do anything more than that.
That's right. I forgot it.
Yeah.
I'm all about the lake kayaking and boating, but I haven't. My parents have like kayaks and stuff. They're a lot of fun, but I'll never go swimming in a lake. It's just something about like there's snakes. And you don't know what's under there.
Exactly. And there was, I think it ended up being a beaver. My family's on the shore and they said something was swimming towards me. They could see it. But I think it was a beaver. Yeah. They said, I was like, what are we going to say? Swim, Eddie, swim.
swim, Eddie. I can't do the lake like swimming. I just, no. Ocean's fine.
Yeah.
I just can't do it.
You reminded me of when I used to read. one of my favorite books was called Footprints of Thunder. And it was kind of a Jurassic Park where some type of time warp happened where parts of the world were mixed up with 65 million years ago and parts, you know, and so forth. So there's like dinosaurs or just.
Oh, that's cool.
Whatever creatures, whatever. So I remember just one horrifying scene. I wish it creeped me out for weeks. I literally couldn't sleep. Lays in the lake and then to escape this, whatever kind of creatures, whatever, you know, they'd be habitats that actually you'd kind of swim under and there'd be kind of whatever. And so she's hiding in there and the creature came and this was their home and it was like sleeping and she couldn't move or breathe. I don't know. It's just, I just had issues.
So, what's that book called?
Footprints of Thunder. So
I want to check it out. I like that kind of stuff.
Yeah. So it was, he did a couple after that. None were as good as that one, but it ended up being one of my favorite books.
This is by James.
Let me look it up.
F. David.
James. Yep, that is correct. Yep.
James F. David. All right. Footprints of Thunder.
Yeah.
Okay. Next question. This is another street fight question for you. A lot of street fights happening.
as they do in real life.
As they do in real life, a lot of these characters, you know, kind of put the gloves on and get into a little fight. In this skirmish, Robert, who would win? Freddy Krueger, circa the very first Nightmare on Elm Street. Or Michael Myers in Halloween 5, The Revenge of Michael Myers.
Who would survive?
Yeah, who would survive? Like, who would win the fight?
Oh, God, that's...
In the street, not mind games.
Just in general, so...
In general. Glove versus...
Yeah, I guess if Freddy's in the real world, he's a little bit more defeatable. So even though you're making me utter something positive about Halloween 5... I will go with Michael Myers.
Is Halloween 5? Leave us alone.
That's Halloween 4. Halloween 5 is the one with now I forgot her name. One of the most annoying characters ever put to screen, but it'll come to me. Now I'm gonna have to look it up because I can't remember.
I've seen Halloween 5. I can't think of it.
Tina. Tina.
Oh yes. Yes, that is.
Remember, she's like running around. I was like,
it is bad.
She does have one of my favorite lines in the movie, where he's asking Dr. Loomis, as asking her like to be sensible, and she's like, "I'm never sensible if I can help it," and she runs away. You know, but it's like, all right. But.
I'm sorry we had to make you utter something positive about Halloween 5.
I uttered a couple positive things, so there you go.
Okay. Next one, Robert. Where would you, in your mind, think you would have a better chance of surviving? The house at the end of Scream. Okay. By the way, you don't know the outcome of what's happening. You're just placed in that situation.
Okay.
Or the Antarctic Research Station in The Thing. Hmm.
Definitely Scream.
Okay.
Because, one, you can get out of that house.
Right.
You get out of the camp, you're gonna freeze to the, you know.
Yeah, you're stuck there.
Yeah, you're stuck there. So, and who knows what food or whatever, you know.
Right.
So, yeah, Stu's house.
Stu's
the original
Stu's
Scream
house.
From Scream 1, not Scream prequel.
Stu's house. Right. Okay, that's a good answer. Okay, I can believe that. Okay, who would win in a fight? Carrie, circa prom night, original Carrie.
Okay.
Or Tina at the end of Friday the 13th, Part 7, The New Blood, at the end of the movie.
Carrie, for sure. Carrie can never, ever do no wrong. So, but yeah. So, Tina.
Blow up a gas station.
Yeah. Tina was still learning some of, I guess Carrie was also learning her powers, but.
Yeah. Well, Tina at the end, remember, strangled him. So she was sort of getting a handle on it. But Carrie, shit's going down right away.
Yeah.
Everywhere.
She brought the whole house down. Yeah, I guess. And I guess Tina exploded the house, but she didn't do that on her own. I mean, she had she cut the gas, or I can't quite remember what happened, but.
Yeah, we're not giving her credit for that.
Yeah, I don't know. It just happened to. It just happened.
I know when I'm. Growing up, when I was depressed and had problems, I would always go to the woods with my psychiatrist and mother and stay overnight. That's just what you did.
It is always that one's awfully strange because they're running around the woods and bumping into each other, and it's lit up everywhere. And like, obviously, there's no
everywhere.
Yeah, throughout
it's,
the
it's like just... a Christmas village. It is. There's so many lights, right?
Yeah, and I was just like, you know, I get it. It's a movie or whatever, and then people are always looking for each other in the woods. The I dropped my earring, and you know,
and that score matching up with the sequence, the music.
There's awful. a lot of needle drops in this one. Of
are you gonna watch it anytime soon?
I don't think I can. What are we talking about watching? The Jason Takes Manhattan. Had its
anniversary
this week, and it's like I don't think I can do it, anniversary or not. I don't think I can.
I don't think I can. The last time I watched it, I was like texting you. We're talking about Friday the 13th, Part 8. Jason Takes Manhattan. And I was like, I don't think I can ever watch this again. It was just, there's some good scenes. That's it.
Yeah, the Toronto Film Board put a little nice, I think it was them, on my Instagram. Because I said, you know, Jason Takes the Big Apple or Vancouver, you know, or some type of joke that way.
Yeah. So
they called it Jason Takes Manhattan.
Oh, that's funny.
I was like, that's
You said okay. Today's the anniversary of Jason Takes Manhattan, or I should say Vancouver or something, which is funny. That's good. That's nice. You got a little kudos there.
Yeah, that was a little funny.
Okay, three more, Robert.
All right.
You're taking a family road trip. You and the family are going. Where would you fare better at? The family as a whole, I mean.
Okay.
The beach in Old. The beach.
All right.
Or Camp Crystal Lake. No cell phones.
And I've already forgotten how the beach in Old ends. So, I did that. M. Night had some type of memory wipe. Like, did I see that movie? I did, and I really can't remember how it
did. Did I see it?
How did they get out of that? So, I don't know. I think we would do better as a family at Camp Crystal Lake because usually.
You're working as a unit.
Those are spared and so forth. But the Jarvises, two of them got out alive. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so that might be for the better. So now if you said with 17-year-old Robert with all of his, you know, friends going to Crystal Lake, nah, maybe not so much.
No, not so much.
Well, yeah.
That's a good answer, though.
We'd not be paying attention and doing stupid things. And at least in Old, we'd have at least a while to get older.
Right.
We'd be just as traumatized. Like, oh, I look 35.
I look 40. This sucks. But that's a good answer. I would probably pick Camp Crystal Lake as well. At least you have a chance. Old, you're kind of stuck there.
Yeah. You can run through the entire forest and see everything.
Right. I think there should be a cool scene, like some kind of retcon at Camp Crystal Lake where they morph together all of the Camp Crystal Lake locations from every movie in like a tour. Like you see like the Jarvis house and then there's like Tina's cabin and then like the original campgrounds. And
yeah, they're all around. And I'm sure I did buy Friday the 13th the game and I think they are somehow related or something like that, which would be a a kid's dream. I thought you were gonna say, "Is that my daughter in there?" As you go by the Camp Crystal Lake sign.
Right, it's Sean Penn, but in a Camp Crystal, like in the police uniform from Friday 13th Part 2.
Yeah.
Is that my daughter?
It's this, all the same universe.
The same universe. All right, Robert. You're on a set jetting excursion. You're driving, rented a car. It breaks down. You're walking for miles because your cell phone's out and you need assistance.
Please Which don't house tell me it's do you want to see? Sorry.
Say it again.
Please don't tell me it's Texas, but go ahead.
It's the Texas Chainsaw Massacre house.
All right.
Could be anywhere, but it's that house. Or the abandoned Overlook Hotel. Where do you go into?
The abandoned Overlook Hotel.
Yeah, it's like it's the winter months, so there's nobody in there.
Even the dead of winter, I would still take that over any back roads in Texas. I'm
right?
just saying that right now.
Oh, if they were like, hey, Texas Chainsaw Massacre house, back roads in Texas, or this cliff up there that you may or may not make it, I'll do that. I'll take my chance.
I say, I better go with the cliff, just in case.
Yeah, definitely not the back roads of Texas. Yeah. I get scared just thinking about that. You did some ballsy locations.
People do it. I don't know. You just feel like you're in the movie down there.
Yeah, I don't want to get disappeared or something.
A little too much. Plus, I was driving alone, so I think I had that not going for me. But
No, I'm a better man than I.
Listening to Stretch on the radio, you know.
Listening to Stretch. Final question, Robert, for Horror Movie Questions for Robert. You're traveling across the United States to go to Boulder to see Mother Abigail. Who do you want traveling with you? Harold Lauder or Nadine Cross?
Oof. Harold Lauder.
Yeah, hands down.
Yeah,
at least you can humor him.
Yeah, and I was actually thinking of the three versions. The book version, the TV movie version, and the new version, whatever. I'm like, I think it's probably best to stick with Harold. Yeah,
I would pick
all three.
I think all three, especially Corey Nemec. If you're just one-on-one with him, he's not a bad guy. At first, he's just kind of nerdy, and you're like, we can talk about stuff.
And I wish now I do have a little regret because he was at a convention that I was at. It was this mashup of Battlestar Galactica and. I don't know what the other convention. It was taking place at the same time, and like Battlestar Galactica stuff was on one side, and was it Stargate or something else was on the other. But sometimes you got mixed in with both celebrities, and so McCorn was at her table, and all I was thinking about was Parker Lewis can't lose. But yeah,
so he's how could you not? Cool
yeah, it's like that's the only thing I knew him by.
That's all we're gonna. That's all that's gonna enter the mind right now.
He
dictated like most iconic role.
Yeah, he dictated my wardrobe for a year at least, I think.
Oh, yeah. Did you have like the bright shirts?
Oh, yeah. All button up, you know, and paisleys and stuff like that. So.
Oh, yeah.
It's still affecting my wardrobe.
They're making a comeback.
I've noticed some late 80s, early 90s hair is all back. I've seen my style is now that I used to have kind of curly on top and no hair on the side, you know, just mops and stuff like that. That's all back now. So.
It's back now along with. Baggier clothes and like baggier jeans kind of stuff, especially for women. It's like back. It's coming back.
Could be all the pandemic weight gain that we all did. So,
right. That's what we're blaming it on. We're like, yeah, it's coming back.
Yeah. It's like, it's just easier.
Let's just make this easier. Okay. And finally, Blind Man's Bluff. I'm going to read the segue into one of Robert's locations on his website. And then Robert's going to discuss this, and these are all at random, so there's no biasness going on. I know the podcasting universe really, really wants us to do this honestly, Robert, and not lie. So,
okay, we'll see.
Okay, originally titled Townies, I originally visited the main location months before in 2013, based solely on the trailer footage. Although it's a pretty light script, the stellar cast makes it all worthwhile. Today marks the anniversary of the film's original release on May 9th. 2014.
Townies.
You know what this is?
I want to say Neighbors, but
yes, sir.
Is it okay? Sick. Whew.
Robert knows.
The term townies, I associate with the movie Rules of Attraction. I'm like, I know that it film under a code name. So,
oh, was that the code name?
No, that's, I knew it wasn't, but I'm like,
she
loses her virginity to a townie. So that's part of it. Anyway,
townie.
So neighbors.
Okay. So this is Rules. Yes. This is Neighbors, and I have not seen this movie, but is this one that you, do you like this?
I do. Actually, this is one that I went to locations just based on the trailer, you know, months beforehand. Yeah. So I was able to kind of track it down. So I just went and took pictures and stuff like that. So, and then
really?
I eventually saw the movie. I don't think I saw it in the theaters. I think I saw it. So Seth Rogen, Rose Byrne, nothing is better to me than Rose Byrne in a comedy. So she is.
She's great.
She's just one of my favorites. So this block is it's off Adams Boulevard. If I remember right. So, but there's some sketchy areas around there, but obviously they have some very nice houses in this area. So, and they came.
I know
back.
The area. It's one block. You're in these like beautiful homes, and the next you're like, I don't want to lot leave my car. It's kind of a weird area. Like a lot of LA.
Yeah. So actually, this page, now that you have it pulled up, the only locations I went to are ones that are in the trailer.